Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Mimosas with Moms podcast. I'm your host, Abby Williams. This week, I'm welcoming on Nicole Schwarz. Nicole is a licensed marriage and family therapist and parenting coach. Nicole and I originally connected during the first season of the Mimosas with Moms podcast and chatted all about positive parenting for imperfect families. I'm excited to be welcoming Nicole back, and I just want to give her a huge congratulations on her newest book, It Starts With You. We chat all about her book in today's episode, which focuses on making space for imperfect parenting, being kind to ourselves, and parenting our kids with a grace-based perspective. Nicole is so real, and I love her shame-free approach to parent coaching and guiding parents through allowing space for kids to be kids and make mistakes while growing through healthy relationships with us. Be sure to pick up a copy of It Starts With You wherever you get your book, and be sure to find Nicole over on Instagram and Facebook at Imperfect Families, and you can grab her free 20 ways to find calm and connection with your kids on her website, imperfectfamilies.com. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode, and if you do, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me, and I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started. Cheers. Nicole, welcome back to the Mimosas with Moms podcast. You joined me back in season one, and now we're on season four, and I'm so excited that we are reconnecting again, and you wrote a book, and I'm so excited to talk about it today. Congratulations. Tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me back, and congratulations on four seasons. I am a mom of three girls, so I have 13, 12, and 7 right now, and I run a business called Imperfect Families, where I give parents support through blog and website, and also do parent coaching. So I meet with people one-on-one to encourage them in their parenting. And I wrote a book, like you said. And my focus is really on trying to be shame-free, non-judgmental. We're all going to make mistakes, and we're going to just move forward in that direction.
Yeah. And the book is titled It Starts With You.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What does that mean, Nicole?
Right. Don't panic.
In a non-judgmental way, right?
Right. I know. It's tricky. And I really hope that
people... But it's true, right?
It's true. And I don't think it has to be done. I think a lot of times we read things, parenting books in particular, that are like,
right,
it is, this is your problem.
You better get this together.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is not my intention here. And I hope that comes across. But really, it came out of, I used to work as a therapist, and a lot of people would bring their kids to therapy and basically just, they wouldn't say this, but it would kind of be implied, like, I'm fine, just fix my kid.
Yep.
And I started, you know, over time.
These are the kids I work with.
Right. Yeah. You know, and I mean, I loved it. It was great. But also I thought, there's like a whole week in between when I see you, I need to start supporting the parents. And so I started shifting, and I started seeing how our own behavior as parents really impacts our kids.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this in a shaming way, but we do. We have stuff from our history. We're triggered by certain things, and this impacts how we parent and how we interact with our kids. So,
How does like our history, I guess, impact what we're doing now? Why should we be looking at our childhood, our past relationships?
Yeah.
What role does this play?
I think when we don't name it and we don't take time to sit with it, it will just run in the background. And by noticing it, sitting with it, naming it a little bit, we can take that story and shift it. And we don't have to be defined by that, or it doesn't have to necessarily drive our behavior. We can say, okay, this happened. This is part of my story.
Yeah.
And no wonder this is why this is so hard for me. Or this was part of my history. This is part of my story. Oh, that's probably why I'm so impacted by that behavior or whatever. I think there's a fear of looking at that stuff because it's scary and overwhelming, and you definitely don't have to do it by yourself. Like, definitely find a therapist or a trusted friend to go through it with, but it's impacting no matter what. We might as well look at it and name it.
How can we tell that it's impacting us?
That's
right. Because I think like some people have stuff that happens in their past and they, I don't know, are normal and happy and healthy and just move along. Right.
Yeah.
Other people, like maybe myself, are impacted by things. Yeah. Right. And now we have these triggers and you bring in these little people into the world and they are little trigger button pushers.
Kids are so amazing at finding like their exact trouble spots, right?
Like, yeah, right. Hey, you and you're like, didn't this. Know that this was a struggle until you came.
Right. I mean, isn't that life? I mean, I think there are some people who really can take what happened in their past and it really doesn't impact them in the way that someone else does. So I don't want to compare kind of how stories impact us because you're right.
Right.
Someone might go through the same thing and really not have that impact. I think I just want to give people permission to say, like, let's say you're losing it with your kid often, like frequently. And you want to move past it. You want to like, you want to do something different. This may be one step in the process. So you might be able to say, wow, I am really losing it. I cannot keep calm or whatever in this situation. One step of that process might be to look at your history. I'm not saying that that is the only step you need to take, but it definitely, our behavior, like our reactions, and not only yelling at kids, if you're hiding in your closet to get away from your kids, that might also be a sign, oh, I'm being impacted here in a negative way. It can look different for everybody, but if there's something in your parenting that you're not really fond of, might be a sign that you want to take a deeper look at that.
Yeah. So, and I get a lot of questions over on my Instagram account of parents who feel like they're stuck in these cycles of yelling at their kids, not having patience with their kids, just feeling really triggered, maybe falling into the realm of, hey, here, fix my kid. This is definitely my kid's problem, right? But a lot of them are also like, how do I stop this? I notice that I'm just like this monster who's running around just screaming at my kids, no patience all the time. I don't want to be like this, but I can't stop. I guess, what do we say to those parents and how do we better support them in figuring out a different way to engage in these situations?
First of all, I just want to say there might be some things that your child needs to learn. So it can be both. So it's just not one or the other. There might be some things. So when I think about kind of moving forward, I go a little bit slower than maybe people like. And so I don't have like a big overnight success story for you. But a couple things that I would encourage people to do. The first is just we need to be kind to ourselves and we need to have self-compassion as one of our very first steps. So if we are yelling at our kids and then beating ourselves up about it and saying, why can't I stop yelling? You're stuck in this shame spiral and it's going to be really hard for you to move forward. So even giving yourself compassion might be a really difficult step. So let that be okay. Let that be hard. And even if you just do it one time a day, then that's one more time than you did yesterday. So, so definitely starting with self-compassion. When we start with self-compassion, we can be more curious about things that are going on. And so when we're being, when we're so defensive and being hard on ourselves, it's harder to look non-judgmentally. So start with compassion, then start being curious. Okay. What is it about these situations that are really hard? Maybe you won't have an answer, but maybe you will. So start being curious about that and noticing what comes up for you, kind of what is the self-talk that's going through your mind. And then take a deep breath and just pause. I feel like people want like an over, I just feel like people want an overnight strategy to stop that. And I don't know if there, there is something. So I just want to give people permission to let it be a slow process.
Yeah.
Because when we can add a pause or even a deep breath,
yeah,
you have an opportunity to make a different decision and a different choice. So yeah. I think sometimes it's like a runaway train situation. Like I'm just yelling and I can see myself outside of myself yelling and it's so hard. And you're right.
Yeah.
At that time, it might be too late. But if we can add just a tiny pause every now and then,
yeah,
you have an opportunity to interrupt that cycle just a little bit.
Yeah. And I also think that, you know, like the title of your book, like it starts with you, you know, like when you are starting with yourself and giving yourself self-compassion,
right?
The self-compassion that we just like give so freely to our children, yeah. Right? Like we're so compassionate with everybody else and so hard on ourselves often as mothers. And just like, you know, I think that we're also these models of behavior,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not to get on the shaming train, right? Like, of course your kid's just yelling because you're yelling, right?
Right.
not to go there.
Right.
But, you know, like if we're modeling also these good behaviors mm-hmm. of self-compassion, compassion for others,
mm-hmm.
apologies,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think that yeah. there's so much important stuff that comes in the ruptures of our relationships with our mm-hmm. children,
right.
these apologies, these repairs, these connecting moments when you're sitting side by side on the bed and mm-hmm. you're talking about what happened and how you were feeling. I'm really sorry,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're teaching all this language and, you know, emotional development with your children.
Mm-hmm.
That too is important.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's important to kind of, I don't know, and like this, let's get off the guilt train.
Right.
Also see like the importance of the messiness that is motherhood.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's what, yeah, when I think about self-compassion and whatever, I also feel like if we make space for our kids to make mistakes.
Right.
Can we also make some space for us to make mistakes?
Right.
And that
right.
is so much harder. I mean, I realize we're the adults and we need to make better choices or whatever. And I think most of the time we do.
We do.
Right.
Yeah.
But we're so great, a lot of us, at like just picking out that one thing, like, oh, I really overreacted there, and then going over and over and over and over and over it. And I just.
We also just like forget that we too are learning.
Yeah.
Right. Like these kids come into the world, they know nothing.
Yeah.
And they're learning, they're making mistakes, they literally fall down when they're learning how to walk, right? They fall down figuratively, you know, yeah. all throughout their whole life,
right?
You know, but we too are stumbling into this new world.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, you know, right. when each child is a new stumbling in of motherhood,
yeah.
you know, you've never been a mother before to this child.
Right.
Now you have the next baby. You've never been a mother before to that child.
Right.
They're all so different. And so I do, I agree. Like allowing them to make mistakes, but also us to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Because it's part of the learning process.
Right, absolutely. And just think about, you know, every stage. I just feel like I've never parented a teenager before.
I have
before.
No idea.
Right.
I have no idea what we're doing. I know. Nicole and I were talking off air about this. Like, we have no idea coming into, like, these preteen right. teenage years and puberty. Yeah. You know, you look back at toddler years. I'm still in the thick of it with right. some of them. I'm just like, I don't know. Baby number four. I'm like, what? What? Why don't you listen?
Right.
You know, where he's number four,
yeah.
you would think like, oh, you should have it figured out by now. You should be a parenting pro.
Right.
Also, this is like your profession. And I'm still like, no clue.
Right.
You know, all I do is talk to moms all day long. I'm mimosas with moms.
Right.
And we're all just like, I don't know, stumbling along and trying to figure it out as we go. And that's just like messy. It's just life.
No matter how hard we try to spread this message,
yeah.
we still have these other messages that are drowning that out. Like, nope, everyone else has it all together. You just don't. You're the only one. And it's like, please hear us.
Please help me. I know.
You are not the only one.
I know.
Yeah.
Nicole, how do we grow these like healthy relationships with our kids?
That's a great question. What, like you're talking about having different kids
I know. It's hard.
I know. And I do feel like that's really important. We can't just lump all our kids together and say, well, here's how I'm going to relate to all of you. I think one of the first things we need to do is be really curious about each person's personality and how they most like to connect with us.
Yeah.
And that's exhausting if you have a lot of kids. But
I love how honest you are, because it's so exhausting.
I know. But it's hard. It is hard, but I want you
to. And then there's like time and, you know. It is. It's hard.
It's hard. And that's why I want you to get like the most bang for your buck, so to speak. Like, I don't want you to try to connect with your kid in a way that does not speak love to them. I want you to just get in there in a way that speaks love to them. And so, you know, being curious, and it's going to change as your kids get older. So maybe they're really cuddly as toddlers, but not so cuddly as teenagers. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is another exhausting part of parenting, is you have to kind of grow these strategies. But really getting to know your kids and, you know, would they rather have you play a game of tag, or would they rather have you just sit with them and listen about their day? And it might not be just one thing, but again, right, we want to do something that means something to them.
Yeah.
And then it will, you know, I was going to say it's going to be reciprocal, and I don't want it to sound like that, but I do feel like when we get it right, man, it feels really good. And that relationship feels really strong.
Right. Because those relationships are for us, right? And like, not that they're an extension of us, or, you know, I don't know, that that's like their sole purpose in life is to be in our relationship, right? But I think that like when you are investing in those relationships with your kids, that's something really important and special.
It is.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, and I even say in the book, like 15 minutes a day, really getting in there and joining with them. But I think about you with three little kids, I mean, four, but you know, the three that are going to be together. The three that are tiny. Yeah. Right. That might be really hard for you to do right now. And I just want to give you permission, everyone permission, that it doesn't have to look like I say in the book, or how you think it should look.
Right.
I mean, with some of my kids, I can just, you know, they just want like a quick little interaction. Like they will just come in, they want me to like lift them up or swing them around. Right. I mean, it just, and that might be just enough to get them kind of through to the next time that you can connect on a more deeper level.
Right.
I don't want to add more to everybody's plate. It's important to connect with your kids, but it's okay for it to look unique to your family.
I know. Cause I just like, I have, you know, these beautiful like visions of what connecting with your children look like. And then there's like my actual family.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like bedtime.
Sure.
I wish that we were like the family that like you went into each child's room and you had 15 minutes where you read to just that child and you guys talked and you guys like had this beautiful bonding moment. But I have my girls who share a room.
Right.
I have three kids that go to bed at the same time and there's only two parents.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, so we do tag team where one of us does Fitz and one of us does the girls. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's not this like individualized experience with the girls where you're having these moments, you know, and those are going to look different, especially as they get older too, I think, when these conversations, I think, become more important when you're having like actual check-ins and, you know, but I don't know. But so, you know, I think, and Instagram and social media does this too, right? Where we talk about like bedtime routines and how important they are. And I'm like, our reading time is not in the evening.
Yeah.
It's not at bedtime at my house.
Yeah.
As much as I would love to do bedtime stories, and I think that that sounds so magical and like peaceful. Right. What a great end to the day.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of mother I am.
Yeah.
I am burnt out by the end of the day. I have nothing left to give. Oh, I'm like, go to bed.
Right.
So, you know, it's like we go in the girls' room, somebody sits in the girls' room and somebody rocks Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's what they get at bedtime.
Yeah.
That's our bedtime routine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And we are at the other end of the spectrum where I go to bed sometimes before my kids because they're staying up so late.
Yeah, that's my 11-year-old. Right.
Like, we will connect at a different time.
At a different time. Mm-hmm. Well, because I just feel like I'm so burnt out with the little people. Right. And I tuck him in at 8:30, but then he reads for 30 minutes and he turns his light off at 9.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I got my butt in bed, right. I have to go to bed at 8:30 when I tuck him in. Like an old, like the old lady that I am.
Hey, I'm with you.
But I need sleep. I need like that, you know, hour of me time at the end of the night.
That is,
you know, to be a better mother.
For sure.
And so, and you know, and I think that goes back to, it starts with you and like taking permission of your time.
Absolutely. I know.
You know? Right. And so like, without being like self-care, because I think like self-care turns into such a buzzword, but what is the importance of self-caring ourselves, right? And tapping into ourselves to be this more present, patient mommy that we all want to be.
I know.
It's hard.
It's so hard. And I really just don't see another way around it. I mean, I feel like if we are going to expect ourselves to stay calm in really serious, big, messy parenting moments, we have to have some bandwidth. We have to have some kind of well to draw from. And so I think we need to stop seeing it as something that's optional and maybe something that's frivolous or that can be put on the back burner, and to start seeing us as it as worthy. We are worthy of that time. And it's nearly, I would say, 100% essential if that's the goal that you want to head toward. I also want to say it doesn't have to look how you might think it needs to look, like the bedtime thing. I mean, maybe self-care for you looks totally different than, I don't even want to give an example because I feel like I don't even want
to. Then you're going to be like, that's the key.
Right. This is it. Right. But this is kind of what I wanted to do through the book, is I wanted to just say, it's, you know, okay, just take a second and think, what does self-care look like for you? Don't even use the word, you know, the word self-care. Just figure out, how can I get a little bit of bandwidth? And for you, it's that hour at the, in the end of the day. Great. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to probably get you wells of like deep, deep passion, but it's something important.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. Because even I like get into this like Instagram, I don't know, social media comparison traps. And I do it definitely with self-care also. Yeah. Where like I love following these like yogi, like mindfulness people who probably don't have any children. And and they have like this beautiful like mindfulness corner in their room. It's like so spiritual, and there's the candles, and you're like, oh, that is beautiful. Right. And they like wake up in the morning and they journal and they have their tea. And I'm like, that's exactly how I should be starting my days.
Right.
Except for my children wake up at these obscene times. And if I did that.
Right. I know.
I would have to wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Well, there's even people that say that, right? So like, just get up earlier than your kids. And you're just like, well, then I will be falling asleep.
I will never sleep.
No, I know. I know. It's, I'll tell you what is the most self-care that I can find during the day is putting on noise-canceling headphones.
Yeah.
And like, tuning and listening to, sometimes I listen to podcasts or books or whatever, and sometimes it's just for the silence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a weekend retreat or something, like, you know, it's not bubble bath or whatever people might think of, but it, for me, that silence is really important. And so even if you,
and that's a really good tip for like those moms who are feeling like the angries, right? And like when you were talking about pause, take that deep breath. You know, because I think like so much of like that sensory overload feeds into some of that angry stuff.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, again, there can be that like guilt layered on there, you know, oh, I'm not attentive or whatever. And I, you can do it in a way that you can still set it up and be attentive before, and then also say, this is really important. I need this.
Yeah.
This sensory
quiet time.
Right. Absolutely.
You guys are really loud.
Right. And I mean, I could keep telling you to be quiet, or I can just put these on and that's going to probably go much better. But I talk all the time about how noise is, it's triggering for your, for your nervous system. So don't downplay the fact that noise impacts you or makes you feel that angry feeling.
It's a lot legit. Of moms feel that. A lot of moms feel that. And I don't feel like we talk about it enough. Yeah. Like the sensory overload that is motherhood, especially when you have the younger years, the babies, the toddlers, you know, that sensory overload is a lot. You have somebody who's constantly touching you. Yes. It's loud.
Yeah.
You know, there's constant moving. You're constantly like scanning the room, you know, it's a lot. And it really like, it leads to burnout. Mm-hmm. It leads to irritability. Mm-hmm. You know, you are not crazy for feeling like this.
No, you're not. When my youngest daughter, when I was just home with her during the day, by the end of the day, some days I would literally be crying because I cannot hear any more words. I mean, she just was she talked so much. And it wasn't just like in the background. It was like, Mom, I need you. And I just could not hear any more words. There were so many words.
Somebody take away the words.
Right. Just.
Somebody else come talk to this child.
So if someone came home, then they could eliminate that, you know, stress. But it is real. It's absolutely real. Whatever you're feeling is legit. For sure.
Nicole, let's kind of go back to, I guess, these parents who are having issues in the home with their children. Maybe there's big emotions. Maybe there's behavioral issues. They're struggling with their own calm because things are crazy at home. Mm-hmm. What are some ways to, I guess, make it more calm?
Yeah, that's not a general question at all. Okay. So like we were talking about before, connection is actually really important. And so I don't want to downplay that connection. So even though you're busy, I still think it's worth your energy and effort to connect with your kids on an individual basis regularly. So when kids feel connected to their caregivers, they're much more likely to listen and be compliant. It's not 100% and never will be. But when they feel seen and heard, they will reciprocate more easily. So definitely focus on that. The second thing I would suggest is reframing kind of how you see these crazy moments.
Yeah.
So right now, things get out of control. You feel out of control in your body. You match that intensity. Things escalate, or maybe you don't match it. Maybe you run away and you hide. Either way, it's scary and overwhelming for your nervous system, for your brain. So we can start seeing these situations less as something that is scary and overwhelming and more as something that you can get through.
Yeah.
And that you're going to be, a client once told me that she imagines herself as the rock in the middle of a storm.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes when these things happen, we think to ourselves, I have to fix this. I have to solve this problem. I have to bring this down. If I don't do something, something bad's going to, well, I don't know, whatever. It's going to escalate. Instead, if you can just say, I'm doing enough by being calm. I'm the rock. I am the confident caregiver here. You don't necessarily have to have a solution in these situations. So bringing your energy down actually can bring the energy down in some of these situations. So once you feel more in control and going back to that kind of taking a pause, taking a deep breath, maybe even noticing what's going on in your mind, because maybe what's going on in your mind is, I can't control this. I don't know what to do. And so even just being noticing that and naming that and then adding some self-compassion, it's all right. It's okay if I don't know how to handle this. When we get our bodies out of that fight or flight, we're able to be more creative. And so when we, so creativity might look like getting on the floor and holding our kids' hands and looking up at them and saying, oh, buddy, you are having a really hard time here. Or maybe we can pull out some empathy with our kids and we can just say, I know you are starving and it is so hard to wait until dinner. I get it. I totally get it. And then we can maybe involve them in something else. You know, can you help me do this or that? But it's really hard to do any strategies that you hear about anywhere or read about anywhere when we are in that fight or flight.
Yes.
So that's why I really tend to just focus on, let's just get yourself, start getting yourself to calm so that you can you can move forward in a better direction in those high energy moments. But I really don't want parents to do a ton of parenting in the heat of the moment. I feel like it's really hard. We are working so hard. Everyone is at their worst. So a lot of times I encourage people to put your energy more into proactive strategies or things after the fact. So what can you do proactively? If you know that your kids always fight at a certain time, or if snack time is horrible, great. You can predict it. Okay. What can we do in advance to make snack time tomorrow better? Can we set out the snack in advance? Can we assign plates? Can we, whatever. If you know that homework is always really hard, let's be really curious about what makes homework hard. Let's make a plan. Let's work with the teacher. Like, everyone wants to know kind of what to do in the heat of the moment. And I really think we're putting our energy in it's not the wrong place, because it's important. Right. But I also think, wow, your kids could learn strategies. We can talk about using play to teach things. We can do repair, like you were saying. All this stuff is important, but none of it happens in the heat of the moment.
Right.
And these are the things we want to work on. These are the, you know, the teaching and the repair and the talking about things and being proactive. That's where the change happens.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really hard shift to make when things are.
I'm really glad that you're like bringing attention to, I guess, like us, right? And our feelings in the heat of the moment. As emotions are flying, behaviors are happening, right? Because I think that there's so much parenting advice, or I don't know, courses that you can take on how to manage your child's behaviors. But I feel like that's like the missing piece, is how do I get myself there to execute these great plans, right? And like, not that there's anything wrong with, you know, these courses or these strategies, you know, these different things you can do. You know, I think that there's lots of different approaches for lots of different reasons. But I'm really glad that you're putting attention on how we have to regulate ourselves and not be in this, you know, fight or flight ourselves to be able to execute discipline, conversation, teaching moments, you know, whatever your goal here is, you know, to get in this more self-regulated space.
I know.
So that you're not being the screaming mom.
Right.
And then nobody's listening and nobody's learning, because you're just screaming.
right.
And I've been there too. I'm not shaming you, mamas. I'm in it as well.
Absolutely. You know? And the thing is, when I talk with people in coaching sessions, the strategies they're telling me are amazing.
Right.
Like, I don't, you know, learn the strategies.
That sounds like a great thing.
Right. It's just, it's tough. And I think, like we were talking about earlier, just give yourself permission to not go from a yelling mom to a not yelling mom
zen in mommy one day, just like in her mindfulness corner. I know. I wish I was that mother too, but
that's okay. Maybe you just yell less one time. I mean, and that's great.
Yeah,
but we are so like
I think that it's just like completely unrealistic that every like parenting expert and coach and, you know, guru, whatever you want to call them, all lose it at some point, right? Like we all have these moments where we have these mom meltdowns.
Yeah.
You're a messy human who gets triggered and messes up and doesn't self-regulate every time.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's why we have things like repair.
Right. Absolutely. For sure. There's a reason that we can write these things. It's because we are constantly practicing them and making mistakes. And we're like, ooh, that's another thing I can write about. That's
another thing I need to make sure other people need to know. I know. So you talk about how there's a 5-step process in your book. What is this 5-step process?
I mean, that's kind of marketing lingo. But I do feel like when I talk with parents, I do go through kind of a process, and there's a reason for it. So I'll talk it through and then I'll give you permission to mix up the order. But I always start with you. I always start with, you have to, you know, do the work, whatever that looks like, therapy, breathing, pausing, whatever. The second part is calm. And so, like we were just talking about, we can't move forward if we're in a fight or flight state. So getting our brains to calm, helping our kids find calm, that's a really important next step. The third is connection, like we talked about. So bridging that gap, always keeping coming back to it, repairing it, working on it. The fourth is communication. So once we have these things, we can communicate with empathy. We can focus on listening well. We can talk in a way that's respectful. We can do problem solving, that sort of thing. And then the very last thing is coaching, which is what I would, where people would say discipline. And the reason I have these in this order is because
I like the word coaching better.
Oh, thanks.
I like that. Yeah.
It's what we do. It's what we want to do, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
But often people flip the order. And so they put coaching, in other words, you know, discipline or punishment or whatever first. And so we're doing all this like reactionary stuff, and everyone is upset and no one is calm and they don't feel connected. I mean, that's an extreme example, but
I think that a lot of us are probably nodding along. Like, I've been there.
Yeah. It's common. I'm, you know, and so there is a reason that I put them in order, but I also want to give people permission not to feel like they have to go through this quickly. Right. So I usually say, if you have to stop at starting with, like, if you're going to just focus on starting with you for a while, great. Let everything else be how it is. Don't make any changes. Just work on yourself. And then maybe you move on to calm. Okay, perfect. You know, like, I don't want people to see it as like, you like, this is it. Like, this is the the five-step thing I've been looking for. Right. Well, each piece kind of fits together, but each piece is going to require some work, and it's totally fine if you skip around or stay in one spot or the other, but that's how I look at it anyway.
No, I love that. I think I love this approach. I think that it's like a much needed approach. I think that these are, you know, steps that are overlooked and really important. And I'm happy that you wrote this book, Nicole. I am. Thanks. Where can my listeners find the book, and where can they find you?
The book is available everywhere you can buy books. So Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, or your bookstore, your local bookstore. And you can find me at Imperfect Families.
Perfect. Great. I'll be linking all of those in the description of this podcast. Nicole, thank you so much for coming back and joining me and sharing this book with the world, because I do. I think it's so important. And cheers to It Starts With You.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Nicole.